I want to thank the sponsors this morning, where Shalom Huberfeld is sponsoring Le'ilu Nishmas, his mother, Sara Bas Yosef, whose Yorzat is this week. We are going to also, had an opportunity to wish a Tzeis Chim Shalom to Abi and Ellen Najar, who are going for Avigail's wedding this coming week. And Mitzvah Shem, it should be B'Shah Tava Mitzlachas. We're going to miss you, but Mitzvah Shem. This is what it means, Od Yishama Ba'ari Yehuda V'Chutzos Yerushalayim. When the weddings are made in the Chutzos Yerushalayim, it's a very special time, and Mr. Shem, we should all be there to celebrate with you, God willing. Let us begin. So without much further ado, let's start at the very beginning. So we're up to, I want to just tell you how proud I am to be at this point with you. This is the 13th Ikkur. This has taken us 3 years of summers to get to. Okay, so this has been a long, long, long in the making, and this has been, Baruch Hashem, wonderful to get to the end of this slowly, methodically, and carefully. Also, to extend the Mazel Tov, continue Mazel Tov to Wechselbaum and Katz Mishpacha, celebrating the Sheva Brachas of John and Eli. Baruch Hashem, the Simcha continues, Mitzvah Hashem, we should always come together for the Smachos. So here we go. The 13th Ikar is the resurrection. And this is a very controversial Ikar as well, and also a widely misunderstood Ikar. So what I want to try to do is understand some of the basics. There's so much to understand in this. This is such a fascinating topic. So let's start at the beginning. Rambam tells us in his Pirush Mishnayos in Sanhedrin, the 13th principle is Tchias HaMesim, resurrection of the dead, and I already explained it. Now that should be a little interesting to us, because we've read all of the Rambam up till now, and the Rambam has been pretty clear about every fundamental of faith. And this one, he kind of, you know, footnotes, essentially. He says, you know, I've already explained it. He doesn't give us much detail. So already some people started scratching their heads and saying, what does the Rambam really mean? Well, he really means what he really means, which is that he did explain it beforehand. And if you reverse in this very, very long introduction to the 10th Perek of Sanhedrin, lo and behold, he talks about it exactly. Here's what he says in the smaller print. He says, "Tchias HaMesim Yesod Miyesod HaSatoras Moshe Rabbeinu." The Tchias HaMesim is one of the fundamentals of the Torah of Moses. Ein das ve'ein kesher im Yehudis lemisha eino imamin bekach. You don't believe it? You don't have your membership card anymore. Elo shehidi ela tzadikim, but it is only for those who are righteous. V'loshon bereishis rabba, gvuras kishom le tzadikim levele roshoim. Reign graces those who are worthy or not worthy. V'tchias HaMesim le tzadikim bilvad. And those who are righteous are the only ones to get the grace of Tchias HaMesim, of resurrection. That's what the Rambam says. He goes on to explain why, some of the logistics of that. This is what the Rambam tells us. We know the last Ani Mamin is following on that, course. And the last line of Yigdal, it must be so important because we repeat it twice, right? Mesim Yechai Ekel. Why do we repeat it twice? It's because it's odd, yes. The tune has a high and a low, and there's 13 Ikarim, so it's odd, so we have to repeat it, right? But anyways, Mesim Yechai Ekel, Barov Chastoi, Baruch Adi Ad, Shem Tehillah, so Hashem will, in the end of the day, resuscitate the dead. Okay, so this is what we're talking about, the resuscitation of the dead, and there's a lot of questions we can and should ask in order to understand this.
Can I ask you one question? Does that mean that the person will know who he was, or the body can be resurrected, which is possible, even possible?
Okay, good. So,
in the realm of today,
there's going to be a lot of questions we're going to ask. I want to tell you what we're not going to cover today. Number one is, in our short amount of time, we're not going to cover reincarnation. Number one, reincarnation, which is what called Gilgul Neshamas, is not one of the Ikarim. Okay, so the notion that a human being comes back in some form or fashion within the confines of this world now, that we're not covering. Now, Rambam is not talking about that. He's talking about resurrection of the dead. So just to be clear, resurrection versus reincarnation. Okay, the one, it happens, but we're not talking about that right now. Number two is the specifics about how, and like, look, we're not, most of the Kabbalists say that today we're not fully one soul, meaning we're pieces of souls which we're correcting parts of, right? And so how that will look when the souls will all come back, and, you know, people were married to multiple people throughout the course of their lives, or people who passed away at different stages. We're not going to get into those specifics. We need to get to a more fundamental, more bedrock, which is the question of how and when. Okay, so the problem is we just simply don't have enough time to cover all those. But nonetheless, let's start at the very beginning. This is a basic question, folks. Has Tchias HaMesim happened? Has Tchias HaMesim occurred?
Yes.
The answer is an unmitigated Yes, absolutely. Read Tanakh. Right, so we read through Tanakh. There are numerous times where Tchias HaMeisim occurs. So an example is Eliyahu. Eliyahu is living in a particular house, and a person who's in charge, who owns the house, her son dies. And she turns to Eliyahu and she says, Eliyahu, just because you're getting judged, remember Eliyahu worked on precise din. He judged Bnei Yisrael on such a level of din that he said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if they're acting like this, there's no rain. Right, there are so many things that he decreed on Israel, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it seems like, actually has to tone Eliyahu down sometimes. Eliyahu is so precise. He's staying in this house, the son of the house dies. She says to him, why is it because you come here that the din of HaKadosh Baruch Hu enters this house and affects my son? So what does Eliyahu do? Source 2, top of the page, in Pasuk Chof Aleph. Vayismodeid ala yeled shalosh pamim vayikra ala Hashem vayomar. Hashem Elokai, toshav nois nefesh hayeled azel al kirboi. Hashem, please return the soul of this child. Vayishma Hashem bekol Eliyahu v'toshav nefesh hayeled al kirboi vayechi. There was the resurrection. The soul returned. He was reconstituted. Vayikach Eliyahu es aliyed vayirdeu ala ben aliyad habayisa vayitneu li'imoi vayomar Eliyahu re'i chei b'neich. So he gives the child to her mother and the child is alive. One of the first episodes of Tchias HaMeisim. Later on, his student Elisha, one of the things that Elisha asked for when Eliyahu was being removed from this world, Elisha asked for a very specific bracha. Does anybody know what the bracha Elisha asked was? He asked for Pishnaim. Anything that Eliyahu did, I can do double up. Which means to say that he actually did resurrection twice. We're familiar with the most one we're familiar with is the child of the Isha Shunamis. Again, Elisha was sojourning in the area of Yehuda and Shomron, the Hare Ephraim, and a little further north, and Isha Shunamis made him his own room where he could stay. She was blessed with a child by his prophecy, and she has a child. The child has some sort of headache and dies in the field. She goes out to Elisha, brings Elisha back, and Elisha does this whole process and again resurrects the child. That's the end of this. One of the Haftorahs we read throughout the year, and Melachim Beis Perek Dalad. Just to see it inside the pasuk Lamed Dalad. Vayal v'yishkav al yelid. He lies upon the child. Vayoshev piv al piv einov al einov v'kapov al kapov v'yigar olov v'to yocham b'sar ha'yelid. He breathes into him. Remember, this child's dead. And Vayoshev v'yelech habayis. I'm sorry. Vayosha Vayelecha Babayas, Achasenov Achasenov Vayal Vayigarolov, Vayozorer Hanar at Sheva Pamim Vayivkach Anel Hanaris. And he keeps repeating this process 7 times, and the child's eyes open and returns to life. So has Tchias HaMeisim occurred? Answer is yes. We've seen it in our history. It's recorded in Tanakh.
Would you distinguish between resuscitation and resurrection?
Okay, that's a good point. Because
were
today,
they dead or were they mo- or
were
they
there we go.
Dead?
So
were
today,
they dead or they mostly dead?
So today, as they say, today, we'll say that medically there can be situations where a person may look dead, but now it may not actually be dead, right? So at this point in time, I think that we're going to trust. Though, you know, I know that there's different ways we can explain this. I think we're going to trust Tanakh when they say he was dead. He was dead as dead with a capital D, you know. So I think that we're not going to question, you know, the medical, you know, how long it took. But we can be for sure about one thing, is that the Isha Shunamis and her donkey did not, you know, it must have taken a little while to get to Elisha and Elisha to get back. You know, public transportation in those days in the hills of Ephraim was probably not as it is today, and even today. But so in the end of the day, I think that we can safely ascertain that this wasn't a case of, perhaps a misdiagnosed condition. Nonetheless, if we want to be absolutely clear, Yechezkel tells us the same. Yechezkel is looking into the Bika Dura, in the Dura Valley. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him famously in Perek Lamed Zayin, in the Sefer Yechezkel, he talks about he's seeing the Valley of Dry Bones, where he sees these dismembered bones of some ancient group who had died previously, in the Gemara debates who they were. And ultimately, HaKadosh Baruch Hu talks about how there's this movement in the bones, the disparate parts of the body reunite with each other, the muscles reform, the sinews reconnect, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, Hinabe ala ruach, speak to the spirit, and the spirit, a wind blows through the valley, and these bodies actually are resuscitated and live again. And the Gemara debates, did they die afterwards, did they stay alive? There's a whole, who were these people, why were they resuscitated? You know, it's a really unbelievable story. Nonetheless, Yechezkel, according to Muslim tradition, this actually happened, right? This wasn't Yechezkel sitting lying there in bed dreaming this. This was Yechezkel actually seeing what occurred. So, in Jewish history, without going too far, When we read Tanakh, yes, resurrection does definitely occur. And these are bones. This wasn't any. Yeah, this wasn't a person who was on the operating table. This is really it absolutely does occur. The question is not really did it occur, but the question is, will it occur? Right? So we've ascertained that in historically speaking, yes, there's been numerous accounts. Will it occur in the future? And the answer is, once again, yes, absolutely. If you read the end of the Yechezkel episode in Source 4, in Pasuk Yudbeis, says Hashem to Yechezkel, Lochein, Hinovei v'omart aleihem, say to Israel, remember, Yechezkel speaking to the people who live in Babylon, the people who live and have witnessed the destruction of the base of Migdash from afar, the first temple. Speak to them. Komar Hashem Elokim, Hine ani posech es kivroseichem, v'aleisi eschem mikivroseichem ami. I'm going to resuscitate you, just like I did this to them, to this valley of bones. I'm going to do it to you. I'm going to bring you back to the land of Israel. Whether that means metaphorically, I'm going to allow you back from Golus. But certainly we know this, probably not metaphorically, because this is the beginning of the 70-year period of Golus, right? There's going to ultimately be a resuscitation. You'll know this will be true when I open your graves and you're able to come out. That's the reason why Yechezkel was given this, not because of the past. Those people might have been inconsequential to the fact that the lesson needed to be learned by the audience who are living now. Know that there's going to be a Tchias HaMesim. Daniel says,
Was he referring to the end of the 70 years? Great question.
So many of the Mephoreshim debate this. You see, this didn't happen to the people you're speaking to, right? Meaning to say, up till then, they're still buried right now, right? So who is he talking about? So most of the Mephoreshim say, well, maybe he's referring to the Asid Lavo, right? He's referring to the future. We're going to deal with when that future is. But there are Mephoreshim who say that, no, it could have been them. It really could have. At the building of the second base of Migdash was what we call a messianic potential era. There could have been Mashiach, like we talked about last week. There was Mashiach. There are times it could come. It should have come. It could have come. It would have come. It didn't come. And so therefore they missed that boat. But yes, he might have been speaking to them specifically. But still, we're waiting. We're still going to get there, God willing. Daniel, remember, the book of Daniel is, most people have not met people who have learned the book of Daniel for a very simple reason. It's the very end. And number two, it's written in
Aramaic,
right? So that's what makes it a little more tough to read. There are parts of it that are in Hebrew, and towards the end, this is really the last parak, it's in Hebrew again, and he says the following in Source 5, Pasuk Beis, Perek Beis, Pasuk Beis, V'rabim yishenei admas afar yakitsu, many of those who sleep in the dust will arise again. So yes, there's going to be a time, says Daniel, very unequivocally, there's going to be a time where there's going to be resuscitation, resurrection of the dead. Those are going to be ascend, and those who are going to descend from that point in time, it's going to happen, it's going to be here. So this is without reading Talmud, this is without reading Chazal, this is without going to anything else. If you just read the Psukim, it did happen, it will happen, yes, absolutely. This is a undebated fact of Jewish life. The question, more importantly, is when and how. Now, that's really the question about this. So, I was actually chatting with Abby Dienstag yesterday. So he mentioned a joke. So I thought I wanted to share his joke here. You know, unfortunately, there are many people. There's always the brunt of the joke. There's always some group in society that has to be the brunt of jokes. So it's usually mother-in-laws, right? Now, I have the most wonderful mother-in-law, so it doesn't apply to me at all. But they tell a story about a fellow who's taking a trip to Israel with his family, and his mother-in-law comes along with. And at the last day, Rahman Islan, she passes away. And they say, what do you want to do about the last arrangements? So they said, well, there's two options. If you want to go back to America, it costs $10,000. But if you want to have a burial over here, it's only $500. It's not that way anymore, by the way. So he says, he thinks about it, and he says, I think we'll take the American option for $10,000. So he said, I don't understand. You know, like, just for a business decision, you know, it's much cheaper here. So he says, yeah, no, but there was one time in Tanakh that somebody was buried in Israel, and 3 days later, they came back. He said, I don't want to take any chances. So you know, like, so the question is, when is it going to be? When is it going to be? The answer is, well, we hope at any point in time, right? That's the flip side, the negative, poor joke side of it. We hope at any point in time there should be an opportunity to return to life. But more seriously, let's try to appreciate where this happens. So there's three questions that we need to ask, and I want to address them to two people in history.
We're going to ask the same three questions, and we're going to ask them to two of the greats of our history. And the one person is going to be Rav Moshe ben Maimon, the Rambam, and the other person is going to be Rav Moshe ben Nachman, the Nachmanides, the Ramban. Okay? We're going to ask the same three questions, and those questions are, what will Olam Haba look like? When is Olam Haba? And how does Tchiyas HaMeisim fit into this? Now, the reason why this is all integrated is because Tchiyas HaMeisim is a bridge between different stages. We've been talking about, just to appreciate the last few Ikarim, we talked about Hashkacha Pratis, which governs this world. We've talked about Schar V'Onish, which governs the next world. We've talked about Mashiach, which is this in-between stage, right? So this is the timeline we've been building up. And now we have Tchiyas HaMeisim. In order to really appreciate what Tchiyas HaMeisim is bridging, we need to understand where it's leading. So to understand Olam Haba, what does Olam Haba look like? That's the question we're going to have to ask first the Rambam, then the Ramban. Okay, and we're going to get two very different schema in understanding what the process looks like. So here we go. The Gemara tells us the following. This is in Source 6, Gemara in Brachos, Daf Yud Zayin Mud Aleph. The Gemara tells us, and this is where it all begins, a very enigmatic piece of Chazal, which has been the center of controversy for many centuries. Margolo Bapume Derav. Rav used to always say the following. This world is not similar to the world that we're in. It's not similar to the world to come. The world to come does not have eating, does not have drinking, does not have reproduction, does not have business, does not have envy, does not have hate or competition. Rather, the righteous sit there and they have these crowns on their head. And they are they imbibing? They are being sustained by the ziva shchina, by the glow of the glory of Hashem. That's the description of Olam Haba. So at this point in time, the question is does this sound physical or spiritual? This experience spiritual. Sounds pretty spiritual, right? That's what it sounds like. Which is what leads the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva. By the way, asterisk at this point in time, we're going to be learning the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva starting in El, which is in 2 weeks' time, in Yilk Yomi, every day, one halacha or two halachas a day. So stay tuned for that. If you want to get involved, please reach out. There's an opportunity to learn online or in shul before every minyan. Hopefully, we'll have an opportunity to do this. This is in Perek Yuches of Hilchos Tshuva. The Rambam tells us, Ha'olam Haba, this is based on this Gemara, Ein boy guf v'gvia. There is no body in the world to come. Elon nafshois tzadikim bilvad b'loy guf. It is going to be the souls of the righteous without any physical component. It has nothing of the bodily requirements. And none of the physical requirements of this world will in a certain sense weigh down the person in that world. Kugon yeshiva v'amida v'sheina v'misa, sitting, standing, sleeping, death, v'arat v'etzev, sadness, schoik, laughter, v'kayotze bohem. And he quotes this Gemara. Kach amru, rabbis chachamim arishonim, and he quotes this Gemara in Brachas. And he goes on to say, well, it does sound like, by the way, in that Gemara it says that they're yoshvim, right, that they're sitting, right, v'atrosem, v'roshem, and they've got these crowns, which sounds a little physical. The Rambam says, yeah, well, that's metaphorical. It's trying to, you know, we can only use certain words. We only have certain vehicles to describe this process. But nonetheless, it is a completely cerebral, completely spiritual existence where there is nothing else left except for the spirit of the person, which is Nelim Zev Ashkina, which is being sustained from the divine. That's the way we view the Olam Haba, says the Rambam. When, pray tell, does this exist? So the Rambam, a few halachos later, at the very end of this perek, says, if we skip to the next source, in source 8, Rambam tells us, why is it called the world to come? Right? To come sounds like the future. It's because it comes after what? After each person's this world. Right? I mean, say it is after each person passes away, that's when Olam Haba starts for them. And it is always the first the next stage for a person. The way the Rambam understands it, he explains it more carefully in Mora Nevuchim and other places, is that really ultimately there are two tracks which are coexistent. So if I plot this out in some graphs, so it's easier to see. For those who are listening online, this is available on the right hand side of all the downloads. Just to see it, it's easier. So here we go. If we view at the orientation of time, let's put this, if we're graphing this, and time is moving in the direction of left to right, we're using just secular orientation for a second. So time is moving from right to left. There is a human life in Olam Hazeh, which is concurrent to Olam Haba, which is happening at the same time, is it? When a person at Me'av Esrim passes away, they drop up into Olam Haba, which is at the same time as they're living. So therefore, communally speaking, if you think about it as a community and a nation, there Olam Haba is continually existing all the time that we're living, and there are many, many, many millions of people and neshamas who are there right now. And when our lives and when our tafkid is finished and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says die, at that point in time, we enter into that because it's right now. So there's essentially two tracks. Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba are essentially concurrent with one another. And when Olam Hazeh ends for a person, they drop into Olam Haba. That's the way the Rambam views it. This is completely spiritual existence. The body is put on hold, and that's it. What was that? Oh, so there's a lot of questions that we can have on this whole business. A lot of questions on the Rambam's structure over here. But the first question I'd like to ask is, so where does Olam Haba fit into this business? Where does Tchias HaMesim fit into this? Because let's think about this for a second. If there's Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba, and a person passes away and they enter into Olam Haba, so where's Tchias HaMesim left? Right? Do you need Tchias HaMesim anymore? Right? The person's done with their body, they've finished their tafkid, they're done. So that's all we should be have, right? So the Rambam does address this. He does address this. The clearest summary of the Rambam is actually the Ramban quoting him in his book called Shar HaGemul. And here's what he says in Source 9. Starting towards the end of the first line in Source 9, he says, V'hine, it's about 5 lines long, so at the end of the first line, he says, V'hine ya'amin be'emes, she'tchias ha'meisim shu ikar mi'ikari ha'da Torah. The Rambam certainly believes that there is tchias ha'meisim. Hakavana bo she'toshuv ha'nefesh leguf, b'ritzon ha'bore, v'yotzu na'neshomos min ha'olam ha'bo, v'yoshuv leguf b'mei ha'tchia. The souls will be pulled back from Olam Haba where they are residing, put reconstituted into their bodies to live for a period of times. They'll be pulled back into the confines of this world during the period of this world, Yemos HaMashiach. And they now have a much easier time, as we talked about last week. In the times of Mashiach will be a much easier time to perform mitzvahs. Then they're going to die again. Meaning to say, the ultimate is not Olam Hazeh, where there's a body. Anything in the confines of this world has to have a body. Anything which is outside of this world doesn't have a body. So therefore, when a person passes away, they enter into Olam Haba. Let's try to do it to this orientation. Person lives. They enter into Olam Haba after their lives. At a certain point in the future, there's going to be a time where they return to this world to regain the opportunity to advance their place and their portfolio in the world to come, because you can't do that in the world to come, in the Yemos HaMashiach when it's easier, and then everybody passes away again, back into Olam Haba. That's the way the Rambam understands it. So is there Tchias HaMesim? Yes. Is it final? No, it's not final, because it's just we'll call it a second chance for the Tzaddikim. Remember, the Rambam says it doesn't happen for everybody. It happens for those people who are Tzaddikim who get the merit to come back again. Because remember, As beautiful and as wonderful and as sublime as the world to come is, in the end of the day, you can only advance your portfolio based on what you do here. So when a person, they tell the story about, you know, that there's a particular village in Eastern Europe that's told that there's going to be Tchias HaMesim next Tuesday afternoon at 3:30. And everybody is so excited. All the loved ones. So what they do is they all go down. It's, you know, they make an announcement. The whole community, everybody's going out to the Besak Forest. Besak Forest is usually on the side of the town, and everybody's going there. And you know, and this one's baking, you know, so and so's favorite apple pie. And this one over here is getting out their favorite music. And this one's putting out their favorite rug. And they're all standing at the side of the Besak Forest and waiting for this moment. And 3:30 comes. The bell in the tower rings. 3:30. Everybody gets out of the graveyard. All the mesim suddenly jump out of their graves and run straight past all the people, past the apple pies and rugs and music, into the base of Medrash, learn Torah consummately for one total hour, run back to the graveyard and then go and return to the grave. Because in the end of the day, every second of Olam Hazeh is so precious. Unfortunately, when we're living through it, it's, you know, we kind of live through it. But if a person has a second chance, if a person gets back, a chance to go back, the Yemos HaMashiach, as the Rambam talks about it, every second's accounted for. Right? There's certain things, there's prioritization, there's a hierarchy of what we can do, what we're able to achieve in the limited time we have. That's where the Rambam looks at it over here. So we do have Tchias HaMetzim in the Rambam's world. It just happens to be that there's these two concurrent worlds which are happening over here. The model I just put over here, just to see it simply on the top of the page. Let's see where I put it in this one. We've just got two sets over here. Is on the bottom of page 5. Okay, so this is where the Rambam has it. There's all these lives, which when a person enters into Olam Haba, they are brought back into the Yemos HaMashiach to return to a greater stature in Olam Haba as well. And to the degree we put in the effort, is the degree we get out. You know, they talk about the fellow who, one more story just while we're at it. The fellow who, he kind of lived a by the letter of the law kind of life, right? You know, everything, you know, if there were two opinions, you know, there's Yesh al Ma'al Ismach, right? You know, he always had a, you know, there's always a kula when the kula could be found. And so what happens is he comes to Olam Haba, he gets there, and the chauffeur pulls up his file and looks at the notes and says to him, okay, so you can come in the car. And he takes him down. He starts driving, you know, through Hewlett Bay Park area, and he says, wow, this is unbelievable, and he says, no, this is not your section yet. And he carries on going, and, you know, he moves a little through the Cedarhurst area, and he's like, this is not too bad either. And he says, I'm sorry, we're not there yet. And they start moving through Brooklyn, and Queens, and the area deteriorates as he goes, and they suddenly get to East New York type of area. And there's a dilapidated building where the car stops outside and says, you know, sir, here you are. So he says, this is Olam Haba? So the man says, well, there is a shitter that that believes that. Right, so in a certain sense, right, the life we lead is where we end up. So this is the way the Rambam looks at it. Now, happens to be the Rambam is highly debated. The Rambam is really one of the marginal pictures, one of the marginal ideas in this. Because let's ask the same three questions again. Okay, so again, the three questions are, what does Olam Haba look like? When is Olam Haba? And how does Tchias HaMetzim fit into this? Let's ask the same three questions again to the later contemporary of the Rambam, the Ramban. Okay, the Ramban has this unbelievable sefer called Torah Sa'adam. Most of it is halacha. It talks about Dinei Avelos. Most of the Avelos we learn is, a lot of it, the Shulchan Aruch, is derived from the Ramban's Torah Sa'adam. The end section of it is called Shar HaGmul. And he talks about din, rachamim, how this world works, the Olam Haba, the world to come afterwards. And here's what he says. He is based on a separate chazal, which sounds a little different from the chazal that the Rambam is based on. Here's how he starts. Source 10. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, Tzadi Beis on Aleph, which is where a lot of these topics are talked about. Tonad of Eliyahu, in the yeshiva of Eliyahu HaNavi, it was said, Tzadikim she'asid HaKadosh Baruch Hu le'achayosom enom chozrim la'afron. Anybody who is going to be revived is never going to die again. Now that sounds a little problematic if you were the Rambam. Because remember, according to the Rambam, there is no eternal existence for a body. Because the only eternal existence can be in Olam Haba. And if you're in Olam Haba, there's no body, right? So even Tchias HaMetzim is temporary, according to the Rambam. The person is going to return to the place where they should be, which is Olam Haba, which is the Ikar. That's the way the Rambam understands it. But this Gemara doesn't sound like that, right? This Gemara sounds like there's going to be an eternal time where there's going to be revival which is going to last forever. So how does that work? Not so simple. So Ramban actually says that the way the world is going to look is going to be a little different to the way that the Rambam looked at it. In Source 11, just the underlined section, he says, Ratzul Amar, Shekiyum ha'anashim ha'zoichim ha'hem, b'ziv ha'kavoid, kekiyum ha'nefesh b'guf ba'olam hazeh ba'achila v'shtiyah. When quoting the original Gemara that the Rambam talks about, remember the Rambam says that quoting the Gemara in Brachos that a person is going to be people tzaddikim going to be sitting and nenim ziv ashchina. So that doesn't mean to say that there's no physical component. It just means to say that the physical component of the human being at the time of Olam Haba will be sustained spiritually, meaning they'll have so much less that they need. They won't need the gross or, you know, we call it rough. Building blocks of physicality to sustain them, they'll be able to be sustained from a spiritual diet in that place, although they, albeit with a physical body. Fascinating. He gives examples. Where do we see this in history? Where else have we seen in history that a physical body can exist in a spiritual realm? Moshe Rabbeinu, right? We know that Moshe Rabbeinu ascends to Har Sinai, and for 40 days and 40 nights, he's there, and he's not eating and drinking, right? He's not. There's no Rita's stand up on Sinai, right? He is completely and fully being sustained by the spiritual. Another example, Eliyahu HaNavi goes up. It doesn't say Eliyahu dies. His spirit does not depart. Eliyahu HaNavi goes to heaven, right? He goes to heaven complete. As a complete human being, he ascends to heaven. There are numerous people throughout history. Chanoch, right? In Bereshis, right? He went with Elohim. Hashem took him. That doesn't mean to say he died. He did not die. He ascended complete into the next stage of existence, which means we have examples where a body can exist in the spiritual domain, which means, says the Ramban, that what will Olam Haba look like? Olam Haba will look like the refined, purified body and the purified soul reunited in we'll call it the pristine existence of what a human being is supposed to look like. That's what the Ramban understands. So there will be a physical component of sorts, a refined physical component in Olam Haba, very much unlike the Rambam himself. Okay, so when does this happen? Remember, the Rambam says that there are two concurrent tracks. When does this happen according to the Ramban? Well, what does the word Olam Haba sound like? Haba sounds to come, future. The Rambam says future means future for every person, right? It's really here now, right? But it's future for us because we're here, right? So the Ramban says absolutely not. Take a look at this in source 12. This is the Ramban in Shara Gemul. He says, by the way, it's a very long essay. It's a very, very long essay. So it's really worthwhile learning. But that's why there's not so many demarcations in the original text as to where it is in the section, which is why it's just one quotation. V'oid matzino mefurash b'medrash, v'yivarech Elokim es yom ha-shvi'i, barach kodesh baruch hu, olam haba shemaskel be'elef ha-shvi'i. He says, you know what? Olam haba isn't now. There is no olam haba right now. Olam haba is going to be only after 7,000 years. Right? The world has got a certain time frame, and the end of that time frame is when olam haba is reached. Which is why, by the way, and so the Ramban is saying is that the model of the 7 days of creation, the 6 days of creation, and seventh day is the model of Olam HaZeh and Olam HaBa, which makes sense, by the way, because of course it's the same dynamics if you think about it. If you don't put your chalent on Erev Shabbos, there ain't no food on Shabbos. That's how it works, right? So the Ramban is saying it's the same model. Hashem felt that it was so important for us to understand how Olam HaZeh and Olam HaBa worked. He gave us a weekly model for us to remember that, right? So though that Shabbos where you forget to prepare, you're going to remember that you shouldn't forget to prepare for the ultimate Shabbos, right? That's the model as is being presented to us, and it's apparently so important that's why it happens on a weekly basis. Okay, so this is the way that Ramban understands it, which means when is Olam HaBa? In the future, it isn't now. It's not coming. It's really in the future. It's a time where there's a physical and spiritual component in the very, very future. And it's going to be at the end of the Elef HaShvi. Okay.
Eternal.
Who says
and eternal.
Not transient.
Who says there's time in Olam Haba? Nobody mentions.
There's no time. It's going to be everlasting. But the point is, when there is time till we get there, because we're in the constraints of Olam HaZeh still until then.
That's where the Rambam seems to make more sense, because the Rambam seems to is saying that Olam Haba is a concurrent process. It's hard to imagine a concept of something that is occurring later that is not within.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Either pick one.
You're right.
Either you're following chronology or not.
Very good.
Rambam makes much more sense in that way. It's not. It's non-chronological.
You're right.
It's concurrent.
You're right. So you're right.
Both ways.
You're right. So, meaning, apparently, once it starts, it's eternal. But up to that point, it is not. It's not eternal until we get there. One second. I want to just follow through on a few thoughts. If that's true according to the Ramban, so what happens till then? What happens till then? A person passes away, Rahman al-Islam. So where are they going until then, right? There's no Olam Haba yet, right? So what happens? So Ramban says, that's the other part of the equation. The Ramban conflated this. What happens after death is what's called Olam HaNeshamos, says the Ramban. The world of the souls. The world of the souls is tracked into two sections. One is called what we call Gan Eden, and the other one is called Gehinnom, right? Now, the way that works is that the soul and the body are separated, and the soul and the body both go through a refining process. What's called Chibut HaKever, when the body decomposes, that's what's called Chibut HaKever. That's a process of refining of the body, so that when it's reconstituted, it'll be cleansed, right? That's the cleansing process of the body, which is why there's famous cases of where certain tzaddikim were reinterred. And there was not Chibut HaKever, there was no biodegrading, right? Because that means that body didn't need refining, right? Very unusual circumstances which have happened, documented cases. But then when it comes to the Olam the Neshama itself, the Neshama goes through a process where, for the way that it's described, is that for most average people it is less than a year. Less than a year, which is why the Kaddish goes on for less than a year. And then the person goes into the waiting room called Olam HaNeshamos, which is the Gan Eden, where they, it's a Me'ein Olam Haba. It's not the full aspect of Olam Haba, but it is a but the person is receiving a Me'ein of what they will in the world to come itself. And that's almost like a waiting room, which the Ramban describes, for the world to come itself. Okay, so this and if you look at it in terms of like graphically, just to point this out, and again, I apologize, I'm describing this in just rather callous terms, and just this obviously means a lot more when we think about people, but just to set up the schema right now, just to appreciate what the way the Ramban understands this, is you have a human lifetime. If we're moving from right to left in terms of the orientation, I'm sorry, left to right in terms of the orientation, there's a human lifetime. After the lifetime, there's a period of refining, which is called an aspect of Gehenna, and then there's a return to Olam Gan Eden, Olam HaNeshamos, and the Neshama waits and waits and waits until the future where there's a world to come, Olam Haba. And then the Neshama gets really enters into, it's reconstituted with the body, and really enters into the world to come. And if you look communally, that there's numerous lifetimes going on all at the same time, and everybody's in the waiting room at the end of the period when Olam Haba hits. And that's when everybody is reconstituted and the neshama is reunited with the body in the full and wholesome experience of what it should be. So when does Tchias HaMeisim take place then?
Right before Olam Haba.
Tchias HaMeisim ostensibly takes place just before Olam Haba. Meaning all the neshamas are waiting and waiting and waiting. And at such a point when they finally are completely refined and the moment has come when Olam Haba starts, there's this reconstitution, there's a reuniting of the full human persona of the body and the soul, and that's when they enter into Olam Haba. And is it right to just hold the questions for a second, because I just want to make sure there's a few things I'd like to cover still. So this is where the Ramban views it. I'm not going to read inside just because of for the sake of time, but the sources are all here. So these are worthwhile reading and taking a look at. This is the Ramban talks about this explicitly. What I did not quote is the numerous interceding paragraphs where the Ramban quotes all the sources, all the Midrashim, all the Gemaras, all the Mishnayos, which support every notion of what he does. What the Ramban's beauty is he's synthesizing all the Chazals we hear here and there, and he synthesizes into a system. That's the way the Ramban puts it together. So now, how many Tchias HaMeisim will there be? Right, so according to this, both the Rambam and Ramban, is going to be a Tchias HaMeisim. According to the Rambam, it's going to be before Yom HaMashiach, the times of Messiah, when the person gets a chance again back in this world before passing away again. Whereas according to the Ramban, it's before Olam Haba. But in the Ramban's model, actually, it turns out that there is not just one Tchias HaMeisim. Because here's the deal. This is a question that was asked to Rav David ben Zibra in the 1400s. Listen to this, how he was asked this question, Source 16. He says, Sha'altami men yedid nafshi. My dear friend asked me, Alzman tchia lifnei shekibalto me'avosecha, shu somuch le'elef ha'shvi. We know that Tchias HaMeisim will take place before Olam Haba at the beginning of the 7th millennia. With the entry of the Shabbos of the world, shekula menucha, v'kaimolon, v'kal lohavin. V'imkein, letzadikim, sorry, v'kashali. It is problematic to me. Im kein atzadikim v'chaside elyon asher meisu al kedushas shemay begalus lo yiru betuvasam shal yisrael v'lo yismuchu besimchasam. That means to say, if that's true, that there are going to be many wonderful and brilliant people who pass away and will miss Yom HaMashiach. They will miss the Mashiach altogether because they're no longer here. How does that work? So the Radvaz answers based on one of his teachers, the Ritva, who says, yes, there's two times of Tchias HaMeisim. Stage one of Tchias HaMeisim is before Mashiach comes. That's when all the righteous get a chance to re-enter Olam HaZeh. And have another chance, again, like the Rambam says, to work again. But then there's going to be Tchias HaMeisim for everyone who's worthy for Olam Haba. At such a point. And we talked about the Ramban, how he understands that by the time there's the final entranceway, the final Tchias HaMeisim, you're either in or out. That's why there's a refining process to make sure that all the accounting has taken place before we get to that stage. But there's two sets of Tchias HaMeisim. One preceding the Yom HaMashiach, and one following it as we enter into Olam Haba. So the sequence of the Ramban, if we're to view this just clearly, is there's regular lifetime, there's Olam HaNeshamos, there's Yom HaMashiach, and there's Olam Haba. Preceding and following Yom HaMashiach is when Tchias HaMeisim will take place. One, to allow certain people back in for a re-opportunity to earn. And number two is really the real Tchias HaMeisim, which is to enter into the world to come. Very different schema. Which way is the way we follow today? Generally speaking, which is the model that we follow today? Generally understood The Arizal very clearly, based on Kabbalistically understood, like the Ramban, like Nachmanides, which is generally the model that we understand, that there is no Olam Haba now, and after passing away, there is no Olam Haba. There's Olam HaNeshamos, which is the waiting room, which is a Me'ein Olam Haba, but it's still in the confines of Olam Hazeh. It's still within the constraints of time and the reward of punishment within this world. This is the way it is understood. However, you should know that historically speaking, there was a great controversy about this. Now, I'm very happy to say that in America, there's never been a controversy or a debacle. There have only been controversies. How do you say it here? Debacles, right? There you go. So, anyways, but nonetheless, in the times of the Rambam, there were controversies. And so the Rambam had a little bit of difficulty because, you see, the way the Rambam, now we got to this point, the Rambam understands that Tekiyas HaMeisim ultimately happens only once, and that's just to get into Yomai Samashiach. And thereafter, you don't need Tekiyas HaMeisim again because the body isn't needed anymore, right? The body isn't needed. The person's real persona is going to exist and live in the world to come, fully and totally. So the Rambam was therefore criticized by many who said that the Rambam doesn't believe in Tekiyas HaMeisim, which is a little preposterous, you think, right? Because after all, we're learning the 13th principle of faith based on the Rambam, who says that Tekiyas HaMeisim is the 13th principle of faith, right? You would think that would be pretty obvious. But nonetheless, there were many people who disagreed with the Rambam. One example was, but just to appreciate this, the Rambam's books were burnt, and the first wave of burning of the Rambam's books, which was during his lifetime, there were four waves in history. The first wave of burning of the Rambam's books was actually the Sefer Hamada, which includes Hilchos Tshuva, which is what we just learned beforehand. This is one of the reasons why people already disagreed with him. One of the major opponents was a person by the name of Rabbi Meir Abulafia, right, who was a contemporary of the Rambam. One of the persons who wrote very strongly against him. As an example, this is take a look in source 17. He wrote a letter to the Chachmei Luniel, the wise men of Luniel, in what's called Kitab al-Rasil. Kitab is actually the Arabic word. Kitab al-Rasil is this was his letter to the sages of Luniel. And he says, and this is a quotation of his, quite hard to get hold of the Sefer. Again, he quotes the Rambam. At the very beginning, at the very last sentence of the paragraph, which is the second last line of 17, how is it possible that anybody, how could anybody who has any form of regular intellect believe that to take these psukim and to take this chazal literally, meaning the Rambam? And he goes through this, and very, very, very assiduous attacks on the Rambam. Another attacker of the Rambam was a person by the name of Rav Shmuel ibn Ali, who was one of the great leaders in Baghdad, if I'm not mistaken. And he also attacked the Rambam. The Rambam actually has a correspondence between the Rambam himself and one of his disciples, who was a person by the name of Yosef ben Yehuda ibn Aknin, who established a yeshiva in Baghdad. And there was a lot of controversy because at this point in time, remember, the Rambam is living in Egypt. And what happens is at the time of the Rambam's life, Egypt conquers the Syria area today. And it conquers Aleppo. And so they start teaching the Rambam's works in Aleppo. But the Baghdad community felt that Aleppo was always under the halachic rule of Baghdad, right? Which was under the Resh Galusa of that area. And so there was a debate as to should they be following the Rambam or those who disagree with the Rambam. There was a lot of attacks going on backwards and forwards. And in fact, just to give a sense of just how difficult this is a translation of the Rambam's letter to Yosef ben Yehuda ibn Akinin. And this is what he says. This is a translation that's found in tradition a number of years ago. This is the Rambam's own words in source 18. With regard to the matter you mentioned about going to Baghdad, I've already sanctioned your plan to open there a house of learning where you wish to expound the law with my code as a textbook. I fear, however, that you'll be constantly involved in disputes with those people and fail to achieve your proper objectives. Moreover, if you assume the practice of teaching, your business affairs will be neglected and you dare not accept any financial reward for them, for teaching. It is far better that you earn a single drachma as a weaver, tailor, or carpenter than to be dependent on the license of the Resh Galusa. If you dispute with any of them, you'll lose your earning. And if you accept from them favors, you'll be humiliated. My advice to you is to pay full attention to your trade and practice of medicine. At the same time, continue study of a Torah voluntarily. This means to study only the halachas of the Rif and compare them with my codes. That's what the Rambam says. Meaning to say, the climate in Baghdad right now is such that were he to open a yeshiva and you start teaching the Rambam as opposed to the Talmudic method, meaning to say, teach through the Rambam's code of law, he would be ostracized and would lose his business. Right? That's what the Rambam is ultimately saying. That's the degree of what's going on at this point in time. Nonetheless, at the end of the day, he did, and the Rambam actually was able to regain influence. But nonetheless, the Rambam was so put in a corner that he was forced to write what is famously known as one of his igros. One of his letters was called Igeres Tchias Amesim. In responding to the attacks of people of the great status of Rav Meir Abu Lafia and Rav Shmuel Ibn Ali, he responded by writing a letter about the resuscitation of the dead. And in the beginning he says, and you can just hear how he says this is unbelievable. He starts off by saying, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu writes in the Torah, yesterday's parsha, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, a pretty clear pasuk. And there were people in history who said, you know what, it says in the pasuk, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem, there's three mentions of God, there are three gods, and that which it says Echad means that the Trinity really is one. So they looked at a pasuk, which should be the most obvious, should be the most explicit pasuk about the belief in God, which is on the lips of every person who throughout history who have had to face trial for being Jewish, and they misinterpret it to mean that that's the point of Christianity. So the Rambam says at the end of that, he says at the end of the paragraph, he says, if they can misunderstand HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then they certainly can misunderstand and misinterpret human beings. So let me make this very clear, says the Rambam. And that's how he begins his letter. The Rambam is obviously under a lot of attack. And it is interesting to note that after the Igeres Tchias HaMeisim, people like Rav Meir Abu Lafia actually responded and in fact accepted the Rambam. And that's why if you read the Rav Meir Abu Lafia's Pirush on Sanhedrin, on the 10th parak of Sanhedrin in Mishnayos, he has a Pirush called the Yad Rama, that's Rav Meir Abu Lafia. He goes to town to explain his perspective, and then he says, and this is what the Rambam says, this is the attacks on the Rambam, and this is why I'm going to defend the Rambam. And the incredible change, when you read the difference between what he wrote in his letter to Luniel and his Pirush on Sanhedrin, you see that the transition. Why? Because he accepted the Rambam's Igeres Tchias HaMeisim. We don't have the time right now, but what an incredible intellectual honesty. Most people in life only know how to dig deeper. Right? They only know how to put their heels in further. It's unbelievable to witness a turnaround. Nonetheless, this is a very troubling time for the Rambam, and one of the biggest attacks on the Rambam was based on his belief of Olam Haba, on how he understood Olam Haba, and hence how that affected Tchias HaMeisim. And this is also based on misinterpretations of the translation, unfortunately. People who got fractured perspectives of the Rambam and ran with it. The Rambam is very clear in Igeres Tchias HaMeisim what the way he believes and why he believes what he believes. Why are the stakes so high? So here we go. The source in source 21, for just a quick second, the Mishnah tells us the beginning of Perek Chelek. The reason why this Perek is called Chelek is because of this line in the Mishnah. Call Yisrael Yeshlem Chelek L'Olam Haba. Every Jew has a place in the world to come. Shenemar V'amei Kulam Tzadikim L'Olam Yirshu Aretz Neitzer Ma'atoi Ma'asei Yodal Yispo'er. That everybody has a section, a plot in the world to come. And he concludes, and this is the way we start Pirkei Avos, actually. Then, these are the people who do not have the ticket. First example is a person who says, there ain't no Tchias HaMeisim. So that kind of person, by the way, this is why when the Rambam says, when you ask where the Rambam codify the 13 principles of faith, you know, where was he sucking this out of? The Rambam is explicitly codifying many of the things that were said in this Mishnah, right? The negative side of it. He says, if this puts you out of the category of Judaism, then certainly you have to believe this to be in it, right? That's the Rambam wasn't doing any fancy footwork over here. This was very clearly based on this Mishnah over here. The first thing a person loses the world to come for is believing there's no Tchias HaMeisim. The Gemara actually points out that this is not a punishment. This is a consequence. If you believe there's no train waiting at the station, there won't be a train waiting at the station, right? Meaning to say, if you say there ain't nothing in the future, it's, you know, live and be merry because tomorrow we die and that's it. And there is nothing, there is no hereafter, then you know what? That's the reality you're going to live with. That's what the Gemara says. It's mida keneged mida, the Gemara responds. It's not, you know, naughty person, you know, you're going to now rap on the knuckles and that. No, it's, you have a certain sense, you have constricted yourself, Rahman al-Islam, to such a terrible and ended world. We don't believe that. We have a long and illustrious future waiting based on the worlds that we're making now. So that's what the mission tells us. Now, why is it so important with this? We're going to conclude because we're coming to the end of this. But there's just a few very important points. Number one is, why is this so important? So the Gemara in Sanhedrin gives us an enigmatic metaphor, and it says like the following. Imagine that you had a blind person and a person who had trouble walking, a person who was handicapped. And they went into, and they wanted to go and steal grapes from a particular vineyard. But the problem is the blind person is not able to access it himself. The person who's handicapped can't walk by himself, so what do they do? So the blind person goes on the, it walks, and the handicapped person stands on their shoulders, and they walk into the vineyard, and the handicapped person directs the blind person, and together they're able to steal the grapes. They get a great cash in, and they're able to take everything. So then they're brought to court, and the owner of the vineyard says, "Where are all my grapes?" So the handicapped person says, I couldn't have done it. I simply couldn't have got in there." The blind person says, I couldn't have done it because I couldn't see where, I would not be able to find the door. So how, you can't prosecute any of us. So the master of the vineyard says, you know what I'm going to do is I'm going to put the two of you together. I'm going to put you on your shoulders, and we're going to bring you to court like that, and we're going to punish the both of you. Right? So that's what the Gemara says is the following. The neshama and the guf live in this world together, and person does many wonderful things and does some less wonderful things in the world. Comes to the day of judgment, and what happens? Is HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, what about this? What about this mess on the floor? And what about this beautiful edifice you created? And everybody says, well, it wasn't really me. You know, I couldn't have done this by myself. I didn't have a body. I didn't have the drive or will. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you know what? We're going to put you back together. Right? We're going to reconstitute you. And as the being as you were, that's how you're going to be judged. Because as a composite being, that's what you are, and for the good and for the bad. It's the time where a person gets the full recompense for what they're saying. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe says in his Sichos, he has a beautiful sefer on this called "To Live and Live Again," translated to English by Rabbi Nissan David Dubov. And he talks about, he quotes Tzemach Tzedek, who says that at this point in time, when the body has gone through the refining process, when the soul has gone through the refining process, the body will be so much, it won't be at odds. It won't be this struggle between what I want and what I know I should do and what I really shouldn't do. There's going to be this convergence of the body being, in a certain sense, the real case of the desires of the neshama, and that's going to be the reunification of a person in the world to come. That's how it's going to be, and that's the real person, not half the person. The real person is all the parts of the person reconstituted together. I would like to conclude with one story, and that is that there's many remozim, there are many hints to Tchias HaMesim in the Torah. One of the most famous ones is... We say every day in Pesukah Dezimra, Oz Yashir Moshe V'nei Yisrael Asashira Azois. Then Moses will sing this song. Then Moses was singing in the history. He's not in the future. Oz is talking about the future. Why is Moshe Rabbeinu only singing in the future? So Rashi brings one of the Pirushim is, Oz Mikan Remez L'Tchias HaMesim. Here is a hint to the world that there's going to be resurrection. And you ask yourselves, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu, B'nei Yisrael, let's try to focus mindfully on what's going on right now. The Mitzrayim have just died. You're now free. You're an emancipated people. You're a new nation. Why are you talking about the future? Enjoy now, right? Well, forget Tchias HaMesim. That's coming. Enjoy now. Why is he talking about Tchias HaMesim? So the Belzer Rebbe told the following story. The Belzer Rebbe came through at the end of the Holocaust, and he was talking about a particular Shabbos gathering. He had the remaining Hasidim around him. And he wanted to sing Shabbos Miros. Nobody could sing. Nobody could sing. Nobody had anything left in them to sing anymore. And the Belzer Rebbe said, you know what? He said, I want to explain something to you. You know why it says Oz Yashir Moshe and the Remez Tchias HaMesim is at that point in time, specifically the time of the Shira of Kriyas Yamsuf? He says, because, you know, Chazal tell us that Chamushim Alu B'nei Yisrael Meretz Mitzrayim and Pashas B'Shalach. B'nei Yisrael left as one-fifth, which means to say that there were four-fifths of Israel who said, you know what, it's fine. We're all right with this kind of Egyptian Jewry. You know, we are Egyptian citizens. We have a nice Jewish dialect. But at the end of the day, we don't need this God business. We're quite fine over here. You know, it's not. We're definitely, you know, abused, and you know, the civil rights movement still has to come to Egypt and everything. But at the end of the day, we're all right where we are. And those people didn't leave. Those people didn't leave Egypt. The Chazal say that they died during the plague of darkness. But can you imagine that? If you think about that, that means to say that there's not a single Jew who left Egypt who didn't have a relative who passed away. Who didn't come with them. You know, you think about, wow, how amazing it is it must have been to leave Egypt. What an exodus it must have been. Well, yes. But think about the pain that they carried with them. Think about the fact that there was not a single person over there who didn't have somebody else who wasn't coming out with them. Some relative, some cousin, some brother, some sister. Think about that. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you know what? There's only one way you can sing. There's only one way you can sing again when leaving such a distraction. The only way you can sing is knowing that this isn't the end. This isn't the end. There is going to be a Tchias HaBesim. There is going to be a future. This is not the here or the be-all and end-all. Oz Yashir Moshe, the only way they could sing was knowing there is a future. That's where it comes. That was what he said to the Chassidim. You may not have it until you to sing now, but understand this is not it. This is not the end of the map. This is simply a part. This is simply a road stop along the way, and it's a very bad one. But nonetheless, we're still going. There's still a much bigger future ahead of us. There was a story Rabbi Fran tells about a woman who was Rachmon Litzon. She was a widow, and she lost her only son in Milchemes Shlom HaGalil. Terrible story in the Israeli army. And she was at such a point she simply couldn't go to family simchas. She wasn't able to go to any simchas, bar mitzvahs, brises. She couldn't bring herself. It was too devastating. One day she was at a funeral, and in Yerushalayim, and she went to the graveyard, and she happened to be passing by the tombstone of Rav Aryeh Levine. And I want to actually show it to you inside. Just if you take a look at the last page of here. Here is the tombstone of Rav Aryeh Levine. Take a look at this. This is the real picture. If I'm not mistaken, this is in Sanhedria. The graveyard says this is Rav Aryeh Levine. The bottom of the gravestone, it says the following: Ani mevakesh mikol mi sheyavoy lishtateach al kivri. Anybody who comes to my stone, sheyomar bepeh male, he should say with a full mouth, Ani ma'amin beemunah shleima shetiyeh tchias ameisim beeis shetale rotzon meis abore yisparach shmoi v'yisale zichron lo'ad lo'netzach nesachim. The Ani ma'amin of tchias ameisim. This is Aryeh Levine. This was Anisim Toich HaTzava'ah. He commanded that what's going to be written on his tombstone, not how wonderful he was, not the way to order extra copies of a tzaddik in our time, none of that is going to be written on his tombstone. What's written on his tombstone? The last Ani Mamin. Rabbi Frank concludes that when this woman passed by this grave, this reading this tombstone, realizing that in fact this isn't the be-all and end-all, was what allowed her back perhaps into her life to be able to experience life again. Because the way the Rambam concludes is, we have a long future ahead together, with our loved ones, together in the Yemos HaMashiach and Olam Haba. Shenizkeh lakach b'mherev yameinu. וכן מן הקש מורה צעק קדוש ברוך הוא לזכוי סיסר לפיך לחיר בולה עם תורם יסר שנם עד נוי חובץ מנצי כוי הגדיל תורב יעדיר.